Parshas Vayishlach, after Shimon and Levi massacre the inhabitants of Shechem, the Torah relates a dispute of sorts between Shimon and Levi on the one hand and their father Yaakov on the other. Yaakov remonstrated with Shimon and Levi. He told them, "Achar tamosi lavisheni biyoshev haaretz, bechnani uvaprizi, vani misay mispar, v'nesfo laivi kun even ishmantini uvesi." Yaakov said, "What you have done is very dangerous. The consequences of your actions can result in our family being exterminated." Shimon and Levi responded, "Vayomru hachzone yasis achasenu. What they did to our sister is intolerable. We have to take revenge." The interchange is a bit problematic. Yaakov is not making a moral point. Yaakov is making a very cold, pragmatic calculation. They outnumber us, we can't stand up against them, and we may get killed. They completely ignored his pragmatic point, and they made a moral point, a point of honor. So what exactly was this dispute? So the Abravanel has a very interesting understanding. It should be remembered that he was a 15th century Iberian grandee. He writes, "Klal Devrayim, what Shimon and Levi meant to say, was Shal Akolon Hazeh, on this disgrace, Hayu Mechuyavim Lehimaser Atzim B'Sakana, they had to risk their lives, Ki Amaves B'Chavod, death with honor, Tova Mechai Hacherpa V'Haboz, is better than life of disgrace and shame." Not only that, but he says that Kvar Hiskim Das Amakim Baruch Hu, we usually think that Shimon and Levi were wrong. Yaakov was right. Yaakov was their father. Yaakov still criticized them years later in the Brachos, Arar Apam Kiyaz. But nevertheless, the Abravanel says, Hiskim Das Amakim Baruch Hu Sha'asu. Hashem agreed with what they had done, with what Shimon and Levi had done. Ki Yachitas Elokim B'chal Ha'arim Asher Silaseihem. The fear of the Lord was on all the cities surrounding them. L'arod Furach Rei B'nei Yaakov. We sometimes think we hear of tales of duels among 18th century aristocrats, or we hear of murders and feuds in the ghetto when someone disrespects somebody else, and we shake our heads and we say that's not the perspective of the Torah. Now, Barbanel thinks it is the perspective of the Torah. Giving up your life in the service of your honor is the right way to go, and that was the position that Hashem agreed with. Makes another interesting point. He says a lesson of the story was, Kamahi gedol atzaras habas, how great are the troubles attendant upon daughters. Yaakov had 12 children, he says. Lo kibel mehem acherpa v'hakolon v'hasakana. He did not experience the shame and the disgrace and the danger shekibel bad bas achash in olde b'neim for his one daughter. Also, he repeats again his first point. Kamu yagia la'anshe amayla v'hakovod shurm cherpa v'hakolon. How great is the impact of disgrace and shame. Sheyaslem sheyasimu nafshem b'chapam. It's worth risking their lives, throwing caution to the wind, listaking haim and shame v'neim. They risked their entire family, their wives and their children, everything they had to take revenge. Abravanel makes the very similar point in the parasha of the Meshuach Melchama in Dvarim. The Kohen would say, anyone who's afraid should go home. So the Abravanel says, the toelus of this is that this underscores the kolon and the busha, the disgrace and the shame that will befall anyone who actually leaves the Melchama, who's too cowardly to fight. And people who are considering, who are not very brave, who are considering leaving, would realize, everyone is looking at me, all Israel is watching, Roim u'maligim, mehem sharku v'yachku shein. So they're going to be so ashamed of the disgrace that will follow them if they leave, they'll go back to the battle. And v'yomru, halo tov lanu lomus l'marome sada, better that I die on the Merome Sada, v'yivcharu maves mechaye kolon v'cherpa v'rtzufa. They would rather die than experience kolon v'cherpa ongoing. So this is the Abravanel's explanation of the interchange between Shimon and Levi and Yaakov. The Ar Chaim, however, has two other explanations. One very interesting explanation he brings is that Shimon and Levi were answering Yaakov's pragmatic concern. They were saying this is not such a risky thing to do because hachazone yasas hachasenu. If we arbitrarily launch an unprovoked attack on people, then they'll be really upset and they'll fight back. But people understand, he says. People understand why we did this. They understand hachazone yasas hachasenu. They will consider this a just response and therefore they will not feel the need to continue the cycle of violence. An important lesson. We sometimes think that why even bother explaining what we do? They hate us. Whatever we do, they're gonna condemn us. But it's not true. The Ar Chaim says even the barbaric Knanim understood that there's a difference between arbitrary, unprovoked violence and a just revenge, just vengeance upon for an outrage. Our lecture tonight, though, is concerned with Aruch Chaim's second shot. His second shot also is that Shimon and Levi, when they said Achazoni Yatzitzach Haseinu, were answering Yaakov's pragmatic concerns and were not simply making a moral point of honor, as Abravanel says. The Aruch Chaim's second shot is Yirtzeh Lahashiv Ki Adrabah. Shimon and Levi were saying, you, Yaakov, our father, you're saying that by wiping out Shechem, we're endangering the family. On the contrary, Adrabah, Yistachnu Bein Ha'umas Kishayiru Shebozi Echad Shalat Bavas Yaakov Upal Basaka Cheftzo. It would be much more dangerous to do nothing. If people see that some scoundrel, some worthless scoundrel, had his way with Bas Yaakov and did whatever he wanted with her, and we didn't do anything, we simply turned the other cheek, then they won't be afraid of us. It's open season on us. With what we did, the immediate exaction of bloody, ruthless, mass revenge, what we did is the best course for our security. A sort of Kahanist ideology. If we simply do nothing, that will provoke them, that will give the green light for more attacks, more outrages. What we did will secure our future. This point, that it's important to avenge outrages against Jews, is actually made by Poskim in various contexts, encouraging people to avenge mostly murders. This is one of several reasons the Poskim give why it is important for Jews to avenge murders by going to the court or by other methods. We will proceed to cite a number of sources from the Poskim on this topic. By way of introduction, we just note some of the sources are concerned with non-Jewish murderers, some are concerned with Jewish murderers. Some of the arguments and points that we will see the post can make apply equally to both, but there are some differences. The due process concerns raised by the Poskim naturally apply particularly with regard to Jewish murderers, while questions of perception, the Aruch Chaim type of argument that we have to take a strong stance so our enemies will know that Jewish blood is not hefker, that obviously is more of a cheshbon with regard to non-Jewish murderers. Although the first source we cite, the Tshuva of the Maram Lublin, actually has an argument for condemning to death a Jewish murderer, also based on perception. He was dealing with what he calls a Maisa Mechur. There was a Jewish scoundrel who had murdered somebody. He was sitting in jail, apparently in the jail custody of the temporal authorities, and the Jews had some influence. The Rabbanim were asked to weigh in or felt they had influence about what this fellow's fate should be, should he live or die. So the Maram Lublin, after a lengthy and intricate analysis of the sugya of Makan Va'onshin Shalom and Adin, the Maram Lublin rules that the fellow should be killed as a harasha, and he gives various arguments for this. His first argument, quite an interesting one, is he says, Kevan shen es parsim ze ha'inin hara ben ha'goyim, since this affair, this murder, is well known among the non-Jews, v'gam ha'pasheh ha'niskar, this criminal, Yoshev Masar ben ha'goyim, he's sitting in jail among the non-Jews, and v'yanichu b'chayim, if we leave him alive, yibazechil Hashem. This brings to mind various news stories that have occurred over the last year or two when we campaigned for the release of murderers, but the Maram Lublin, at least in his case, was worried that if we go easy on a murderer, that will be a Chil Hashem. The second Svar of the Maram Lublin is similar to the Aruch Chaim. He writes, Gam yavo hagayim lahakel b'nikma shvichas dam shal Yisrael chalila v'chas. If they see that we don't take murder seriously, we're willing to let a murderer off the hook, they'll take murder not very seriously. They'll think that if someone kills Jews, big deal. The Jews themselves don't care about punishing murderers, so why should we? So in order not to encourage the non-Jews to take murder of Jews lightly, we have to condemn this person to death. Then the Maram Lublin makes an utterly fascinating point. His correspondent has suggested that maybe death is not necessary. Maybe we can just punish him by lechaser evarim, to remove some of his limbs. Maram Lublin says that is a bad idea. Why? Halo epsher sheyavu mizeh pirtzeh gedola mizeh. Sheyavu lahamer daso. Maybe he will apostatize. Acher kach, out of bitterness, out of anger at us, The Yale Lakotz Machil will be a painful thorn, Lasoni Israel. He says, Kasha Zacharani, he's basing this on sad experience. He said, Bimei Chorfi, in his youth, Sheir Bimei Hagon, Rav Shachna Zal. The great Rav Shachna, there was such a story. Gamkin Ish Belial, a villain. V'ram Al-Alan, V'hitar Hagon, L'nakir Eshtei Eina, V'lachtach Es Lashono. The Gon allowed them to poke out his two eyes and to cut off his tongue. V'achar Sh'aslo Kalele, after this dire punishment, Hamer Daso, he became a Christian. V'nasa Goya, Achas V'hol Ibnei Zarim, he had Gentile children. And we suffered greatly from him and his family. So therefore, don't do this. If you're going to punish somebody, you kill him, he says. You don't take half measures, and then that comes back to haunt you. Another very important tshuva, discussing the Aruch Chaim's concern about teaching our enemies a lesson that there's a price for Jewish blood, is a tshuva in the Tzemach Tzedek, Krachmal, the early one. He was talking about a case of a Jew who was murdered. The murderer this time was a Gentile, not like in the case of the Meram Lublin dealing with the Jewish murderer. And he was asked, should the murderer be brought to justice? Is there an obligation on the family, on the community, to pursue justice for the murdered Jew? And he says, absolutely. And most of his tshuva deals with the idea of Goel Hadam, a topic which we will discuss shortly. But at the end of the tshuva, he says that in addition to the chiyuv of Goel Adam on the family, is a general chiyuv on the community, he says, Kidei ligdor hapirza, shem chas v'shalom lo yunok min ratzeach, if chas v'shalom we do not avenge murders of Jews, yed damon shalom b'nei bris, chas v'shalom kehefker, the blood of Jews will be hefker, v'yosifu lasis keila, they'll do it again, exactly what Shimon and Levi were saying according to the Aruch Chaim, v'arei kol avrei derech b'slakon azu, l'chein tzrichim kulam l'seyel azeh, because all Jews are in danger, they all have to contribute toward the pursuit of justice for this murdered victim. And he writes, V'chein nahagnu pa'amim harbe, this is an established custom, he says, I've done this many times, V'asinu imparnasei adar, he's worked it out with the leaders of the generation, Shohim amidim galim, they appointed galim, lirduf achra rotzchim, to pursue murderers, afilu pa'amik shenu yodim shlo yuchel lahotz mikach lapol, even sometimes we knew we weren't going to win. We knew at the end of the day the murder was going to get off. We still try. Again, to teach them a lesson. We have to make a statement. We find the same concern in the Divrei Malkiel. Divrei Malkiel's case, the family was apparently willing to seek justice. The problem was that the victim had already been buried. And it was assumed that if they would file a complaint with the authorities, an investigation would be opened and an exhumation and autopsy would be done. The question was, is the concern was nivul ames. We normally do not do autopsies and exhumations. Is it worth it we're not even going to do it here, we're not even going to ask for it, just the government will do it, but we're going to be gorim, we're going to cause an exhumation based on our filing of a complaint, of a request for an investigation. So, one of the Divrei Malkiel's concerns is, Im lo ya'aru mishpat al ratzeach, if we don't ask for an investigation, Yedam Yisrael chas v'shalom kehefker, same language as the Tzemach Tzedek. Ki yomru she'ein mishpat l'harig Yisrael, people will say that there's no penalty for killing Jews, and the Divrei Malkiel points out that even though, arguably, we're asking the mace to sacrifice, to give up his kavod, to be manuval on behalf of Klal Yisrael, on behalf of the rest of the community, who said we can do that? Who said we can force the mace to suffer for the general good? He brings a model for this. It says that we're not mavriach shvuyin, we don't help captives escape, or we're not poed to them, yosir midmeim, b'shvil tikun olam. Beyond a certain point, beyond a certain price, we're not poed to them, we don't help them escape, because we're afraid if we pay too much, it'll encourage kidnappers to capture more. Or if we help them escape, the captives will take out their frustration on the rest of them. So he points out, even though Shvi is very dangerous, they might call Shvi Sakana, we ask individual Shvuyim to suffer because helping them would have repercussions for the greater community. He says, and even though the Yehuda Nachum Sofer in their famous discussions of autopsy said that even though in autopsy the nivul ames would be mutter for pikuach nefesh, if you had someone whose life could be saved by an autopsy, you would do it. But, however, for the general advancement of medical science, even though that may help other Jews in the future, that's not considered a concrete and clear and present enough danger that would permit autopsies. This, he says, this is considered clear and present danger. B'nidan didan, ha'chashash yei kal b'nei ha'goyim l'hametz Yisrael, hu chashash gadol, it's a great chashash, al kol ish alfaneinu, on everyone who's right here, it's not considered a remote and speculative chashash in the future. And therefore, his conclusion in the tshuva is, in chelek hei, simen samach, l'chein nera barush a mitzvah al goyle adam, shal neish shiyasu mishpat al rotz chenafsho, it is a mitzvah for them to seek justice, to seek punishment for the murderer, l'man lo yizud an od, in order to discourage our enemies from doing such a thing in the future. So this is the first of three groups of reasons the Poskim gave for the imperative of seeking justice for murders against Jews. To ensure that the non-Jews, that our enemies, do not think that Jewish blood is cheap and that they can do such things with impunity. The second reason is a much more technical halachic argument. That is the mitzvah of Goel Hadam. The Torah says that when somebody kills, b'mezid, b'shogeg, the shogeg goes to the Eir Miklat, but if he goes out, the Goel Hadam can kill him, b'mezid, there is no Eir Miklat. There is the idea of Goel Hadam. Relatives of the murdered victim can or should, discussion of the Gemara, whether it's mitzvah or rishus, avenge the death of the victim by killing the murderer. So the Achronim raised a number of questions about the applicability of Goel Hadam at all in contemporary times, and the specific sorts of situations that arise. First, there is a basic machlokes achronim whether Goel Hadam, the technical mitzvah of Goel Hadam, applies at all, b'zman hazeh, that we don't have a Sanhedrin and a Beis Din of Smuchim who can do dinei nefashos. In Siman Beis in Choshen Mishpat, the Urim V'Tumim says, kivan she'ein rishus b'yad Goel Hadam laharag rek akar shenigmar dino b'Beis Din. Beis Din has to paskin that the murderer is indeed a murderer. They have to pass in these rotzach. So imkeim is manazed leker based in. We don't do capital cases. Leker din goel adam. The technical formal mitzvah of goel adam is obsolete today. Chavas Yar also says this in Simon Kuf Memches in his Tshuvas. Miu nired is manazed the bushel din nefashus. Afilu harig b'mezid lo yafa kochah shel goel adam mikach Sanhedrin v'chol batin Yisrael. Since we don't have a Sanhedrin, the Goel Hadam also cannot exact vigilante justice. The Ksos, however, disagrees. The Ksos in Siman Beis and Choshen Mishpat brings the Tumim. He says no. He says that we don't need a real conviction. The Rambam says that even Beit Echad, even Beit Miuchedes, even in cases where there isn't sufficient edus for Beis to convict him, nevertheless, there still is a din of Goel Hadam. So even Bizman Azeh, where there's no Sanhedrin, the mitzvah of Goel Hadam still applies. The Yeshua of Yisrael, or Yeshua of Kutna, sides with the Tumim, though. He says that when the Rambam says that you still have Goel Hadam, even when Beis Din could not kill the murderer, that just means that the Goel Hadam himself will not be killed as a murderer if he kills the murderer. But it doesn't mean that l'chatchila he has the right to do it without a psak of Beis Din. Even the Ksos, who says that Goel Hadam is, in theory, Noig Bizman Hazeh, he's still not sure whether L'maisa it is, because he says, even if you don't need a psak of Beis Din that he's a murderer, but you still do have to have Edim. You still do have to have Edim that he's the one who killed it. He's the one who killed the Mace. If you don't know that he killed him, then obviously he can't be killed. So Bizman Hazeh, he says, we're not Mekabel Edus for Dinei Nefashos. Arbat Edin, whatever their authority is, we certainly don't hear capital cases, and we're not Mekabel Edus. But he's not sure. He says that it may be that for this purpose, we do have a Kabbalah's Edus, because the Rambam says that we don't need all the halakhs of Edus, hichas shu'as and b'dikas, even if they contradict themselves in the b'dikas, certain questions that we ask them, it's still okay, because even though that Edus would not work for a capital case, it's enough for the din of Goel Hadam. So the Ksos is not sure whether the due process requirements for capital cases apply here, and whether the standards are relaxed enough to allow for the possibility of Goel Hadam b'zman hazeh. Another question is, classic Goel Hadam is vigilante justice. The relative of the mace finds the murderer, pulls a knife, and kills him. Practically speaking, in most cases, we're going to deal with the Goel Hadam either turning him into court or somehow indirectly causing him to be killed. Is that also the mitzvah of Goel Hadam or not? So the Tzemach Tzedek, in his tshuva, says, Pashut, that it is. He was talking about a non-Jewish murder, but he says, Zeh Pashut, im ein hu atma yachal hamiso, if the Gaal Adam can't do it himself, but he can do it through the agency of another, by paying someone, he has to pay for it. It's Pashut, he says, that it works, and it's Pashut that he's mechuyev to lay out money for this, he says. Like every mitzvah in the Torah, a person must teach his children Torah. If he can't, he has to hire somebody. A person has to circumcise his son. If he can't, he hires somebody. He says, this mitzvah too, a person is supposed to avenge his murdered relative. If he can't do it himself, he hires somebody. And in his case, they were going to do it through a court, and he takes for granted that getting the authorities, the courts, and the criminal justice system to punish a murderer, spending money to do that, is included in and required by the mitzvah of Goel Hadam. The Chavos Yair, though, he was talking again about a Jewish murderer, and he is very opposed to using the court to punish the murderer. His case was Shnei Bachure Chemed Be'eretz Russia. There were two youths in Russia. They got into a fight. One of them pulled a knife, stuck it into the other one's heart, killed him, ran away. He says that when one of the Gedolim told him what sort of tshuva he would have to do, in those days tshuva didn't mean learning Musar. Tshuva meant various types of sigufim, self-flagellation and stuff. It was too much for him. So Parak Ol V'nasa Reish Brayoni. He became a kid at risk, and he became the leader of bandits, the Chavri Ganavim. He was eventually caught for Gneva, not for the murder, and they were going to kill him for the murder. They were going to execute him for the theft, not the murder. The question was, should the Jews try to save him or not? So the Chavos Yair says that there were different opinions, and that one of the Chashuvei Ha'er V'lamdeha, one of the respected Talmidei Chacham of the city, said, Asur Latzilo. One of the reasons was, he said, not only is it Asur Latzilo, but if one of the relatives of the murdered man was there, he could actually turn him over to the government, Kedin Gaal Hadam, so certainly we shouldn't save him. The Chavos Yair was, at the end of the day, he wasn't sure we should actually save him, but he says, certainly there is no Din Gaal Hadam, and it's absolutely not correct to say that a relative of the murdered man could turn him over to the government for execution. He gave various reasons for this. One of them was, Goel Hadam means you can kill him, he says, and possibly even kill him through agency. Mashliach, maybe, he says, like hiring a mohel, hiring someone who's good at killing people, he says, but not to turn him over to the non-Jews, to the non-Jewish government. That's a question of Masiri, he says. He says, even with regard to civil cases, we know that we can't go to court. Lo nase aveinu plilim, kol shkein biskei nefashos. He brings the pasuk that David was sharply criticized by the Navi for killing Uriah by sending him into the front lines of the war against Ammon. It says, osa harakta b'cherev ne Ammon. You killed him through the cherev ne Ammon, ha'ilach aladuna b'din Sanhedrin. Even if you held he was deserving of death, you should have killed him by the Sanhedrin. V'yesh p'kepei de gedola b'zeh. So he's not necessarily disputing the Tzemach Tzedek's idea that it's possible and that one is required to fulfill the mitzvah via agency, but he says certainly not by involving the court, again, at least not in the context of a Jewish murder. With regard to a non-Jewish murder, the Tzemach Tzedek raises the question, he thinks it's obvious, he says, but he raises the question of whether the mitzvah of Goel Adam applies at all to a non-Jewish murder, and he says, yes, it does. He says, Maishna, aims for a cloud that a non-Jew should have a different status than a Jew regarding this, and he actually brings a riot from a Medrash. The Medrash says that when David sallied forth against Goliath, he took 5 stones. The Medrash says, what were the 5 for? 1 l'shmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, 1 l'shmo shel Aharon, 3 for the Shlosh Avos HaOlam. What was the significance of Aharon? The Medrash explains, Aharon Amar, lo ani goel hadam, alay l'fro mimenu, am goel hadam. Why is Aaron a Goel Adam to kill Goliath? So the Mefarshim explained, the Radak and others, why was Aaron a Goel Adam for Chafni and Pinchas? Chafni and Pinchas were the two Kohanim, the sons of Eli, who were killed due to the Plishtim. Goliath apparently was responsible for that. So Aaron was a Goel Adam for his descendants, Chafni and Pinchas. So Tzedek points out, Chafni and Pinchas were generations after Aaron. Nevertheless, Aaron is considered a Goel Hadam, and Goliath was non-Jew. Nevertheless, Aaron was still considered a Goel Hadam. The point about him being generations later, he also derives from the point of Goliath. The Tzemach Tzedek explains at length that there is no shear to Kurva. Anyone who is paternally related, Mishpachas Ahav, Roy Le Yarsho, the Halachas of Yerusha, according to the Torah, you have to share a male ancestor at some point. Then you can be Yerusha person. The Nachla passes up all the way to a male descendant and then down to that male descendant's children. So as long as you share some male ancestor, you are considered a Karov. And if you are the closest Karov, then you'll be a Gal Hadam. He seems to imply that if there are closer relatives than you, you won't be a Gal Hadam. But if you are the closest living male relative through a common male ancestor, you have the halacha of a Gal Hadam. And one of the rayas he brings is from Golias. The Chavos Yair is not quite so sure. Throughout, again, he was dealing with a Jewish murder, and he may have been more reluctant to pass in Gal Hadam, but throughout his tshuva, he makes many arguments against the Gal Hadam, against applying the category of Gal Hadam. Here also he says, Pirush Gal Hadam Bikra Lo is Baralon. It's never made clear, he says, in Kol Karov L'Nirtzach Matzi L'Rdif L'Harik or Tzach Yechem L'Vavo, not clear which Krovim are included. And in general he says, Tuva Yesh L'Fakvik V'Pratidina Malalu. There's a lot that we don't really know, that we don't have that much literature on the topic of Gal Hadam. Shem Hilchos Al Mashicha, Poskim don't talk about it much. This is a point we'll return to later. Poskim actually do talk about it. There are a handful of cases of Gal Hadam. But he says we don't really have that much literature on it. For Rambam Zachar Divrei Hazal, the Rambam just brings the Gemaras, Kasher Heim, Kizad Darko, but we don't really know. And he says, therefore, the Gadol said that there's a din of Gal Hadam, that if a karov of the murdered man would be here, he could turn over the boy to the government. That is betalim umuvutalim kol shkein lamasra l'malcha. Certainly that's to turn him over to the government. Chaski lo lahaskir. Regarding spending money, so the Tzemach Tzedek says that you do have to spend money to do this mitzvah. If you can't do it yourself, you are obligated to spend money, just like, as we mentioned before, Talmud Torah and Mila. However, he says there's a limit. Now, it's interesting, he doesn't say the limit we might have thought, which is chomesh, for a mitzvah zaseh. He says you only have to pay what he calls chok kavua litin l'shovtim v'shotrim l'sardiot, the normal legally fixed fees to pay the judges and other officials, that you have to pay. But mitzarchu lahotzi yosim and haragil, extraordinary sums, you know, schar melitzos, v'shchadim, either to pay for lobbying or for bribes, those things, he says, you don't have to pay. Why? Because Chazal were worried, he says, that if we lay too much of an obligation upon the Krovim, they'll abandon the whole thing and they'll leave. Just like we find in the Gemara, the burial used to be an extremely onerous expense. It was even worse than death, the Gemara says. The surviving relatives suffered more from the burial expenses than from the death of their relative. And people would just abandon their relatives and flee. And so Rabbi Gamliel instituted that he would be buried in simple clothing in clay pishta, and everyone began to do that. So here also he says, we don't want to obligate the relatives in too hefty an obligation, because that will cause them to give up on the whole thing. Now, as we mentioned before, although the Chavos Yair says that we don't have that much literature on Gal Hadam, that is certainly true. There are, however, a handful of rather interesting tshuvas where the poskim do, the Ashkenazic Rishonim, do talk about Gal Hadam as if this is something that they actually did in their time, although it's not entirely clear from the tshuvas whether this was Harah Shah, what exactly they were doing. There's a tshuva in the Rush, Klaunland Zion, Simon Beis. Zimri killed Eliphaz. These are presumably fake names. He uses names of Rishonim from the Torah. Zimri killed Eliphaz. Eliphaz had been married to the sister of one of the two witnesses to the murder, but his wife had predeceased him. At the time of his murder, his wife was already dead, and therefore at the time of his murder, one of the witnesses who had been his brother-in-law was no longer directly related, because the connection between them, the woman, had died. However, there were children. The witness still had children murdered man had children from his wife who had been the sister of one of the witnesses. The question was, in kosher lahayed, can these witnesses testify about the murder? The Rosh's correspondent was worried about two things. First of all, the witness is a brother-in-law to the murdered victim. Second, he's karov to the Gal Hadam, to the children of the murdered victim or his nephews. So the Rosh says, not a problem. Neither one is a problem. You worried about brother-in-law to the victim, he says, no. Since the woman had already died, Nisrach Ka'akurva, and it's kosher. You worried about him being a nephew to the Gal Hadam, not a problem either. Ain't that Korva remains. He's still their uncle. Ein korva shel gar lehadam posel edus given shekasher lenirtzach. As long as you're not a relative to the murdered man himself, we don't care if you are related to the gar lehadam, his children. Marsham, in his notes on the Ksos, points out that this rush seems to have a... He doesn't say exactly what the dintar was about, whether they were actually going to kill the... allow the gar lehadam to kill the murderer, but the rush did have a dintara, and he talks about gar lehadam as if the institution was still a living one in his time. In the Maram Mirzberg, we find a truly fascinating tshuva. He has din gar lehadam rodfuhu ad chova. Gar lehadam, for some murdered man, chased, pursued the murderer ad chova. They caught him, hisigu, and presumably they killed him. Kedin asu gar lehadam, they acted properly. Shenokmu avihem, for avenging their father. Gavruk te lekotlu vein ledamim, they bear no punishment for what they did. He got, even though it's murder, but it's murder in a good cause, and he got praised for it. Sounds like some people were grumbling about what they had done. He says, no, what they did was absolutely right. Nobody should criticize them. He adds, in their pursuit of the murderer, they violated the law of Tchum. He says, not a problem. The Gemara says that based on would be able to execute somebody on Shabbos misvara from a kalvachomer, except that these exeris akas of lo sivaru, kol shekin tumen which is drabanan, having what be called nefesh adocha Shabbos. So the actual din of gar lehadam that they killed, they avenged their father, is fine, is good. No one criticized them, even if they have to violate nefesh drabanan of Shabbos, that's also fine, no problem. There's also a tshuva in the Marival. He's not entirely clear that he meant this lemaisa, but most of the Marival is halach lemaisa, and this tshuva appears in the context of other things which he was asked, apparently halach lemaisa, where he writes, Ha'horig nefesh ein legal hadam likach mamam in ha'rtzeach. The gal hadam should not accept blood money, kofar, from the ha'rtzeach, v'limcha olav. He brings a Rambam, and he says, Mehai tamanera, afilu m'chaz ha'rtzeach v'asa tshuva. Even if the murderer does tshuva, still you cannot forgive him, because the Rambam says, She'ein nefesh zesh lanera kinin shal gal hadam lekinin shal kosh baruch hu. And the kosh baruch hu normally accepts tshuva, but I guess here we don't say tshuva. And he just says gal hadam should not accept the money and should kill him. And it sounds like he meant that even bizman hazeh, he still had the institution of gal hadam. So these are two concerns, two reasons to avenge murders: to teach our enemies a lesson, to make sure they understand that Jewish blood is not free, and also because of the idea of Gal Hadam. A third concern raised by a couple of the poskim, a truly fascinating issue. Many of us who have heard ghost stories are familiar with the idea that ghosts, the spirit of murdered men, do not rest easily, they're troubled, until their murder is avenged. Now, this is not just nonsense, not just folktale. Chavos Yoyer acknowledges that this is something that is shogar b'fi kol, but he says it's true, it has basis in Chazal. He says, although we said earlier that the din of Gal Hadam would not apply, and that we cannot actively turn this guy over to the government, but with regard to saving him, he said, to actually take active steps to save him from the government, that he says he's not so sure we should do. Because, Shogar b'fi kol, shenefesh hanerag, lo yimtza manoach, ad shiyasin akam b'ratzeach, the soul of the murdered man will not rest until his murderer is punished. There are many proofs of the truth of this thing, he says. In Maisim Shahayu, apparently he meant stories that occurred in his time. Gami Divrei Chazal, he says, on the Kray Kodesh, he gives three examples. Gebei Kayin, where it says that the Dmei Hevelachicha, where I guess Tzakim and Ha'adama, also Dmei Navas. I assume that refers to the explanation of the story in Tanakh, where Hashem said, who will punish Achav? And the spirit of Navas said, I will, I'll go do it. And Dam Zachariah, Tzchiach Sel, Levilti Ikasus. The story of Zachariah, that his blood was boiling, and when the Zoradin came in, he said, what's going on? And they said, it's a Dam of Zachariah that we killed him, and he killed all kinds of other people to try to quiet the blood down. So he says, this is a reason to let the murderer be killed. Then he vacillates. He says, first of all, but he wasn't actually being executed for this murder, and he was being executed for theft. And he wasn't being executed with necessarily the right misa. But he says, self call self. Maybe the murdered victim is happy however he gets killed. So he goes back and forth on this. And indeed, when he begins his tshuva, he has a very interesting turn of phrase. He writes that everything he writes is lo lahalacha kol shkein l'maisa, ki him dinei nefashos. Now, obviously, dinei nefashos in one direction, that if we allow him to be killed, that's dinei nefashos. But he actually adds dinei nefashos in the other direction. Kol shen nata b'davar l'zchusa shel rotzeach, if we incline in favor of the murderer to let him go, huktas chavasa shel nirtzach. That's, to an extent, a chav that's against the interests of the murdered man. Mitzara nefesh, as he explains later. So he says, really, you're in a bind. It's not like Isser just be machmer, or like Dina Nefashis just save his life. Here he says, two lives are at stake. It's the life of the murderer, but you have to weigh that against the life of the victim, or the rest. The victim won't be able to rest until we punish him. So it's difficult, he says, to paskin correctly in such a case. This idea that the soul of the murdered man cannot rest until he's punished is also mentioned by the Divrei Makil. We mentioned earlier the issue there was whether to open an investigation which would result in an autopsy. And he says that one of his arguments is that Nivul Hames could be permitted because it is for the benefit of the Mace himself. He writes, the mace himself would be okay with this because it's for his own good. He mentions in Rabbi Yehuda, in his autopsy tshuva, who already suggested that punishing the murderer would be considered l'chvodo shel ha-mace, would be for his honor to punish the murderer. So honor, you know, doesn't necessarily mean this thing. But he explains that, like the Chavos Yar, ki yaduah noach l'nefesh ha-nerag shehargim ha-ratzeach, it's known, he says, that it's good for the soul of the victim when we kill the murderer. He brings various medrashim, medrash rabin, pashas maseh, gittin, the dam zachariah, he says. And he adds, v'zehu inyan goel hadam, that's the whole point of goel hadam, shem mitzvah of lir defeser atzeach, is because, he explains, in order to achieve the peace for the soul of the victim. So we see that, broadly speaking, the poskim have three concerns, three arguments in favor of actively seeking to punish murderers who kill Jews. First, we have the issue of Chil Hashem and the Maram said, but more generally we have the idea that we want to make sure our enemies understand that blood of Jews is not cheap, that there's a price to pay. Second, we have the mitzvah of Goel Hadam, that there is a mitzvah to avenge murderers of Jews. And third, we have the concern of Samachronim that in order to achieve peace for the soul of the victim, we must punish his murderer.